Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of The Charlie Kirk Show. So thrilled to be able to offer AMA Mondays, where I answer your questions that you guys have emailed me at freedom@charliekirk.com. freedom@charliekirk.com. We got some great questions here today, and I cannot wait to answer your questions. We got so many in. freedom@charliekirk.com. freedom@charliekirk.com. And if I select your question, you win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine. So you email me, freedom@charliekirk.com, your questions, and I happen to select your question. Well, then you're able to say, hey, Charlie, you owe me a book. freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campuses.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Let's get to the first question. Hi, Charlie. I love your podcasts. I have been a Christian and grown up in the church and am currently going to university online. I'm a white male, so by the left standards, I'm automatically racist. With that being said, my question would be, what are your thoughts on various megachurch pastors posting various things that are pro-Black Lives Matter? These pastors are Levi Lusco, Michael Todd, Chad Veach, Judah Smith, etc. I found it to be quite troubling that this has infiltrated our churches on such a large scale, and that is polluting the pastor's main mission, which is to lead people to Christ, but creating division in the church as well. Well, thanks so much for the question, Drew. I totally appreciate it. Look, I'm a Christian. I am a vocal, evangelical, Bible-believing Christian. And I am so deeply disturbed at how pastors all of a sudden have tried to become woke on the issues of Black Lives Matter and systemic racism. We have gone into great detail in the last week, probably more so than any other podcast in the entire country, but the lies of white privilege, but the lies of systemic racism in America, about how Black people are not being targeted by the police. With that being said, woke pastors have decided to throw out the Bible and have started to embrace a cycle of lies. I see pastors taking knees not to Jesus Christ in the church, but instead they're taking knees to the idea of we must atone for the institutional racism in our country. Nonsense. 1 Samuel 16:7 says this, "But the Lord said to Samuel, quote, 'Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him.' The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearances, but the Lord looks at the heart." 1 Samuel 16:7. You know what that was? That was the original Martin Luther King quote. I don't care about the color of their skin. I care about what's in the heart, the content of the character. 1 Corinthians 12:13 says, "For we were baptized by one spirit so as to form one body, whether Jews or Gentiles, slave or free, and we are all given the one spirit to drink." The idea of made in the image of God, Imago Dei, is uniquely Christian. And I got a message to these woke pastors. Instagram followers and donations to your church, that's not going to get you into heaven. I think a lot of these woke pastors try to take the culturally acceptable left-wing narrative because they're afraid of the mob. And surrendering to the mob won't advance the gospel. And for most of these pastors, of course, Rob McCoy and Jack Hibbs, my dear friends who have been profiled on this podcast many times before, are not at all categorized in what I'm about to say. But if you were silent on Easter, if you were silent on Palm Sunday, and yet you're taking knees and you are doing entire sermons dedicated to a lie of alleged systemic racism, and now you're the one that's outraged, now you're outraged. Meanwhile, they took Easter away from us because we needed to be safe, which was built on a lie, then you are a coward. You are not a champion for Christ. You're not a champion for the church. You're a champion for the current culture. You are louder about fake systemic racism than you are about abortion or the slaughter of the unborn. There's plenty of issues going on in America. I think it's perfectly understandable for a pastor to say what happened to George Floyd was a singular point of evil. Now let's get back to the gospel. But the diatribes, the blackouts from these celebrity pastors, makes it feel as if they care more about what Hollywood thinks of them, how the broken culture views them, than the reality of the situation. And for those of us that believe in the gospel, we wholeheartedly reject the idea, because of how God made you, might be white, might be Hispanic, might be black. It is Satan who reminds us of our sin. The left wants you to believe that just because you have white skin, you have done something wrong, that you have to atone for your existence, that you must take a knee to the mob. This is nonsense, this is rubbish, and this is anti-biblical. In fact, we need pastors to stand up more than ever and say, this is not Christian. This is against the Bible. Why have the pastors been so silent at the destruction of our inner cities? I'm going to tell you why. Because most pastors in America are absolute cowards. Most pastors in America are more worried about allegedly offending their congregation than standing for truth. But I'm going to tell you what. Christians are growing increasingly impatient. Christians are growing upset that their own Christian leaders live the life of flying private jets. They care more about their 2 million Instagram followers than they do care about the health, the vibrancy, and the engagement of the American church. I can tell you that Christians are saddened by how complicit the church has become with this far left-wing mob. I encourage you to listen to the sister episode of this episode that we dropped simultaneously with this. Now talk about how the mob is able to change human behavior, but how powerful they can be. But if the church is not willing to stand up for truth, if the church is not willing to look their congregants in the eye and say, look, I know there's a lot of emotion happening in the country, but there is no statistical truth around the idea that black people are being gunned down in record rates by the police. It's just not true. 10 unarmed black individuals unfortunately died last year. 9 to 10, it depends on how you categorize it. This is not systemic. In fact, white people are far more likely to die at the hands of the police than black people. And this idea that you can't think something just because you have a different skin color, that's against the Christian ethic of Imago Dei, made in the image of God. Everything that Christ talked about is being ripped up to shreds by our own pastors. Should we talk about the scourge of racism in the world? Of course. Individual racism, we do not have systemic racism. If there were laws on the books that were racist, I would advocate against them. The only ones that might exist are affirmative action that are racist against white people. Those are the true racist laws that we have on the books. And anyone that purports the ideas of white privilege, especially those in the Christian community, you're defending something that is categorically racist. But there's a whole myriad of sins in the world, including lying, including pandering, including vanity. And so if you advance lies to protect your own vanity, to appease an ever-growing, baseless, dataless, and increasingly violent mob, then who do you really fight for? Who do you represent? Are you a pastor or are you a left-wing activist? I deal a lot in the Christian world. I deal a lot with pastors that care much more about how they are viewed by the secular world or how their social media engagement goes. And the abandonment has been unbelievable. I want to give Liberty University so much credit at Falkirk Center for Faith and Liberty. Liberty University has been unbelievable. Jerry Falwell Jr., they stand for truth. They stand for the Bible. They stand for the gospel of Jesus Christ. I encourage everyone listening to this to check out Liberty University. It's absolutely terrific. Liberty is one of the few that stands for good doctrine, that stands for truth. The vast majority of individuals in the Christian world, in the Christian space, are way more focused on appeasing an ever radical and ever vocal component of American society, the woke mob. And for you pastors out there that are participating in this, I am so beyond disappointed in your calisthenic doctrine that you are trying to use to justify that we need to get serious about white privilege, as if we're still living in the antebellum Jim Crow South. What the church should be fighting for is maybe, hey, why don't we as the church fight up against the idea that there are 3,000 abortions a day in America? I haven't seen any of these pastors speak out against that. I haven't seen any of these pastors speak out against the fact that the black birth rate has flatlined since the 1960s of the passage of Roe versus Wade. Sure, they'll give a rather vanilla statement on Sanctity of Life Sunday, but when it comes down to battling for life, they're nowhere to be seen. How about biblical marriage? How many of these churches have decided to no longer fight for marriage between one man, one woman? How about the war on men, which we talked about in a previous episode? So many of these mega churches care far more about how they make sure the tithes and the offerings are still flowing in. And I've spent time around a lot of these pastors, and I can tell you there's a crisis in Christianity right now. We need sound doctrine. We need Christians that are so beyond willing to be brutalized in a public square. And isn't that what we are called to do? Isn't that the guarantee of being a Christian, especially in this broken world? I sure know I get my fair share of arrows. I'm not a pastor, and I'm not involved in a church. But if you're not getting attacked, and if you are not getting criticized, especially when you're in a position of leadership that deals with moral and cultural issues, then I have a lot of questions. I have a lot of questions about what your motives really are. So thanks so much for the question. You win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine. PCmatic is a whitelist next-generation antivirus software designed to stop modern threats like ransomware. Independent testing, AV Test, just named PCmatic as a top performer in the cybersecurity industry, giving it the Best Performance Award for 2019. Only PCmatic has American research, development, and support. PCmatic's competition is made in foreign countries, where many of the viruses originate. You need to build the wall around your computer. The Iranian Revolutionary Guard and the Chinese Communist Party are coming for your computer right now. Do something about it and build the wall. It's PCmatic.com/Charlie. PCmatic is just $50 for 5 devices for 1 year with a 30-day money-back guarantee. And if you act now, PCmatic has officially offered my listeners a free month of security protection with the purchase of an annual license. To accept this offer, go to PCmatic.com/Charlie. That's PCmatic.com/Charlie. Build the wall. Keep people out of your computer. Protect yourself. PCmatic.com/Charlie. Let's get to the next question. I have a question, rather an argument my wife and I had that I didn't have a rebuttal for. And I'm curious if you can help with this. She stated, quote, what about a black man that got sentenced 36 years in prison for armed robbery and the white guy that got like 19 months for rape? The only thing I could respond with was, well, number one, you're not comparing the same crime. And number two, was it the same prosecution or the judge? They probably had different lawyers. And she goes, but it's rape. And I said, I understand. But no means that okay, and you can't compare apples to oranges. But just want to know your thoughts. Thanks. Austin, congratulations, Austin. You win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine. So I want, basically, this is a Facebook meme. I saw a similar meme on Twitter, and I saw a similar meme on Instagram. A friend of mine passed it along as little time as I try to spend on Instagram, where it showed a picture of Brock Turner. Brock Turner was, of course, the individual who was a Stanford athlete who was a piece of garbage. He's an absolute piece of garbage. And he was kind of became the, let's just say, the metaphor of upper middle class privilege that can get you off if you commit a heinous crime. I am not going to get into the specifics of the case. I'm not. He was charged on 5 different counts. It was two were thrown out, and he was found guilty on 3 others and was basically let out of prison very, very quickly. The media quickly rushed to this and said, white privilege, because Brock Turner is from a wealthy family, and he went to Stanford, and comes from a lot of money. And the other image that the individual's talking about is a picture of a black man who did armed robbery and served 36 years. So not for a second do I think that Brock Turner got off because he was a white person. Not for a second do I think that Brock Turner got an easier sentence because he's a white person. It's because he comes from a wealthy family. So for example, if LeBron James's kids got in trouble like this, he would hire the $5,000 an hour law firm that Brock Turner probably had to get him off. He would hire the best law firm in the entire country to get his kids off on a crime if they were ever to commit a crime. I'm not saying they would. Or Denzel Washington's kids. The issue is not race. The issue is wealth. and wealth and race are not directly correlated together. Now, there are macro trends, and we've talked about this. We've also talked about how a white individual that is raised by a single mother has far less likely to succeed than a black child that is raised by a two-parent home. Two-parent households are the most assured ticket to success in America. Having a mom and dad in the home is the highest likelihood that you have to succeed. And so Brock Turner has, I'm saying he's a piece of garbage. I mean, what he did was awful, and I think he should have served a lot more time in prison. But the way our justice system works, and I'm not saying this is necessarily a good thing, it's just the way it is. If you are able to convince a jury and a judge with very, very skilled lawyers, well, then you're able to get off easier. And people have tried to have reform saying, well, we shouldn't have wealthy people that have better lawyers. That's never going to happen, okay? If you work really hard your entire life and you get unfairly accused of something and you've saved a bunch of money, I think it's reasonable to say that you should be able to use that money on the best lawyers imaginable. And it's not just that the lawyers are well connected with the judges. That happens sometimes. These lawyers make actually really compelling arguments. And I don't know the specifics of the Brock Turner case. To be perfectly honest, I didn't dive into it. From what I understand about it and from what he did, the victim's name was Chanel Miller. And I think it's absolutely disgusting what he was accused of doing. It's beyond sexual assault. It was rape. Quite honestly, he should serve indefinite time. And that's why I believe that the Republican Party conservatives' position should be, and this is a great way to win suburban voters, and it is a moral position, that if you are convicted of rape by a jury of your peers, you should serve life in prison. That's right, I said it. If you commit rape and you are convicted by a jury of your peers, you should never get out of prison. An average rapist in America serves 5.5 years in prison. So for all the discussion about how, oh, we need to reform the criminal justice system, well, let's look at the facts. The average rapist serves 5.5 years in prison. It should be 10 times that at the very minimum. And so we have rapists walking the streets free that have done the most brutal, unspeakable horror to women you can imagine, sometimes to other men. And so I'm not exactly someone who supports opening up all the prisons. That would be Black Lives Matter. And nor do I think that if you commit armed robbery, are you someone that shouldn't get prison time? Do I think that there is inequity in our prisons? Of course. Do I think there's inequality in our system? Yes. I think that a white man, Roger Stone, had an unfair trial. I think that Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, a white man, was set up and was law entrapment, not law enforcement. So there's plenty of evidence to show that our justice system is equally corrupt against people of all races. And I think, again, it is a sloppy mind. It is lazy, and it is not a multivariant analysis to blame every problem on the entire world on systemic racism, which does not exist. Instead, there might be other reasons for it. The other reasons very well could be wealth. There are other reasons could be fatherlessness. It could be violence in certain communities. There are other injustices that exist in the world besides racism. But the left's fixation on racism is intentional because it is so unbelievably hard to convince somebody that systemic racism does not exist. That's why what we do here on the Charlie Kirk Show, we talk about data and science and statistics, and the numbers are all there. And despite the numbers being more easy to access than ever, people still believe an outright lie. So Brock Turner, piece of garbage. What he did was awful and unspeakable. Chanel Miller, an absolute victim. And I think Brock Turner should still be in prison. But it's not because of white privilege. It's because he was born into an above average income level. The same could be said, by the way, if Brock Turner was an Indian American, and if he was an Indian American, it'd be a higher likelihood that an Indian American would have access to more money because Indian Americans make almost 30% more on average than white Americans every single year. This idea of white privilege, of categorizing people based on their skin color, will lead us nowhere but societal destruction. And maybe that's exactly where the left wants us to go. Are you guys being crushed by the cartel of the colleges? Well, to get people with student loan debt out of student loan debt, that's why Credible is there. Credible is an online marketplace that gets you pre-qualified student loan refinancing rates from up to 10 different lenders. They help people get out of student loan debt. If you've got student loan debt, you could benefit. With a lower rate, you could save on interest or lower your monthly payment. And with a shorter loan term, you could get debt-free faster. You can consolidate all your student loans in one place. Incredible customers have given awesome reviews about how much better their lives have been after refinancing their student loans. You might not have student loan debt, but if your friend does, your son, your daughter, your grandson or granddaughter, you can go to Credible.com/Charlie. That's Credible.com/Charlie. On Credible, you see actual pre-qualified rates from up to 10 different lenders, whereas with some other marketplaces, other online marketplaces that won't be named, you'll get ranges of rates or ballpark estimates. It only takes a couple minutes to check rates, and checking rates does not impact your credit. They never sell your data, so you will not receive spam and phone calls from dozens of lenders. So please visit Credible.com/Charlie. That's Credible.com/Charlie. When you refinance using that link, they'll give you $200. Credible.com/Charlie. Let's get to the next question. Hi, Charlie. I will start off by saying thank you for helping us young conservative Americans find our voice in regard to politics. In general, I agree with and support your ideologies and concepts. However, I was confused when listening to a June 6th podcast that discusses the topic of the Big Bang, titled Does God Exist? Digital Assassinations... I was not fully able to tell whether or not you support the concept of God creating the Big Bang and the idea that it agrees with the Bible. Could you please explain your view on this? Thank you, Catherine. Sure. And so this is still something that is being debated in theological and scientific communities. What I was saying to Will, and I probably could have done a better job, but I was being very intentional and I was trying to be respectful to Will because he's a dear friend and I didn't want to come across as overly combative, is that no matter how you believe the universe came into being, whether it be a Big Bang, whether it be a creation, there is an agreement in the scientific community that there was a moment. If you believe that space, time, and matter exist, which every person with a functioning brain should believe that because it's proven by Einstein and proven by Newtonian physics and the laws of thermodynamics that space, time, and matter exists, then therefore, by definition, using the laws of logic that have been proven to be true, something that is spaceless, timeless, and matterless, or transcendent of those things, supernatural, so super matter, super time, created the beginning of the universe. And we call that thing God. So whether it be a Big Bang, whether it be a moment where God flicked his metaphorical wrist and started the universe, those of us that believe in God, those of us that believe in a creator that created the universe, and this just all wasn't a mistake, we point to that scientific discovery as affirmation of God, and that it is completely consistent with the Bible. It's consistent with Genesis 1:1, God created the heavens and the earth. And in Genesis 1:1, where the Bible says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, we call the heavens and the earth and the universe all as one, and God flicking his metaphorical wrist again, or just pointing and saying, now it all starts. That could be the Big Bang, it could be whatever you call it. The secular atheists have a very difficult time explaining this away. They have a very difficult time explaining the Big Bang and how it just happened accidentally. It defies the laws of logic, because if something is space, time, and matter goes into existence, something supernatural from that must have existed. This is something that William Lane Craig talked about frequently, Frank Turek, C.S. Lewis. It is the beginning stages of the ontological argument, if you will, for the existence of the universe. And for those of you that don't know ontology, it's basically relating to the branch of metaphysics and dealing with the nature of being. It shows the relationship between the concepts and the categories in a subject around natural being. And so the ontological argument for the existence of God can go all the way back to the Anselm of Canterbury in his 1078 work, I believe, called the Prosyologion. That's a good trivia fact, where he defined God as a being which no greater can be conceived. And basically, he argued that this supernatural being has to exist in the mind, even in the mind of the person who denies the existence of the God. And so, basically, this goes to the biggest five arguments for the existence of God. Thomas Aquinas, the great Thomas Aquinas, had the five ways, if you will. Some people call it the five reasons, which is, from my best memory, it'd be God the prime mover, God the first cause, God the necessary being, God the absolute being, and God the grand designer. And there's so much to go into this, but basically Thomas Aquinas is one of the first apologists of the church. He was in the Catholic tradition. He lived right around 1225, between 1275 and he was one of the most important theologians, specifically Catholic theologians, in American history. His most famous book was Summa Theologica. That's a really another good trivia question for you. So without getting too far into the weeds, I'm happy to get more into apologetics. I'm an evangelical Christian. It is the most important thing to my life, and it is important in a variety of different ways. And I never want to come across on this podcast as if I'm condemning other views or as if I'm acting as if I'm a better person because I'm a Christian. That form and that blend of Christianity really bothers me. It does. Instead, I want to describe a Christianity where you can become reborn, where you can find order in a chaotic world, where you can make sense of all the questions, that you are able to have a book that you can pour into. And the beauty of the Bible is that it is the only book, the more you read it, it starts to read you. And so I hope that helps clarify that question. And it also, I think, is very important for everyone listening to this podcast to wrestle with the hardest questions that we have as human beings. It is critical to go back into the great thinkers of Socrates and Plato and Aristotle, Descartes, Cicero, Aurelius, Hume, Smith, the postmodernists and the leftists and the Marxists and the radical deconstructionists. They don't believe that there is much wisdom that ever came before them. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said this in so many words, where she said, why did everyone before us screw everything up? I mean, what hubris that must take. What dismissive attitude it is to the great thinkers. And if you go all the way back to the first person who got into ontology, it was Parmenides, who is a Greek. He was a Greek philosopher. He was pre-Socratic, so he was before Socrates. And he was the first one to really pioneer the idea of ontology. And the more that you are able to dive into the great thinkers and the more worldly you can get about philosophy, the better you're going to understand the left, the better you're going to understand the country, the better you're going to understand conservatism, the better you're going to understand the unique place that America has into the world. And so please email me your questions about these. I'll answer them the best I can. I read the great books as much as I can. And when I can't, or when I'm not able to because of time reasons, is a better way to say that I can't, is I watch lectures. I listen nonstop. I listen 5 or 6 hours of lectures every couple days, where I pour into the great thinkers that are able to articulate the great thinkers of a time's past. And I can understand the atheist secular philosophy better than most atheists and secularists, because it's very important you can understand where the other side is coming from. And then you'll be able to fasten yourself better in the arguments and think critically. I mean, Descartes, who is really the beginning of the individual, of rational thinking in Europe, the beginning of the Enlightenment is a much better way to word it. The beginning of the Enlightenment, Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. Your thinking is your existence. And the lack of you engaging in logical thinking and the Aristotelian tradition, understanding Plato and Socrates. Look, a lot of colleges will not teach this correctly. They will teach this from a blatantly anti-Western lens. They will teach this from a lens that makes the great thinkers and the great writers such as John Locke and Aquinas and Aristotle and the Augustine of Hippo and their beauty and their depth, they'll be so dismissive of them, when in reality there is limitless amounts of exploration and fulfillment that you can find in searching these. And yes, even read Rousseau. Make sure you're in a good mood, because he got so much wrong. And you can even read Marx, and you can read Engels, and you can read Hegel, the thinkers that basically helped destroy civilizations during the 20th century, responsible for more deaths than any philosophical community in American history, which goes to also show, which is, people say, well, Christianity has been responsible for so many deaths. That is not true. A misapplication of the text of Christianity by imperfect human beings that were power hungry and filled with sin could potentially be blamed for suffering and for sin in the world. It is not the doctrine of Christianity. It's not the greatest book ever to exist in the history of the world, the Holy Bible. Every religion claims they are right. Every religion says that we have a monopoly on truth. What makes Christianity different, besides the archaeological evidence, despite the overwhelming scriptural evidence, despite the biblical evidence, despite the moral evidence of Christ's teaching and how the Christian ethic leads you to the most highest level of human flourishing and contentment of any ethical system ever argued for in American history. Despite all of that, Christianity is different because, unlike other religions where you have to grow closer to God, where you have to try to do more to get closer to His holiness, God came to us. He gave us a messianic gift. And for those of you listening that might be uncertain or dismissive of religion, that's perfectly okay. I get it. And some of that is Christians' fault. Christians can be too self-righteous. They can be thumping their chests. They could be so sanctimonious. And I hope I never come across that way when I talk about religion. Instead, I want to tell you what it has done for my life. It has given me a peace. It has given me salvation. It has given me a totality and a fullness of a worldview. Not that I have answers to all the questions. In fact, I can confide in you right now. The hardest questions I have to answer are natural disasters. Why would God allow natural disasters? That's a difficult question for any Christian to ask. But it has given me so many answers to why we are here. What are we supposed to do? What is after this? What is beauty? What is love? How am I supposed to marry? What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to act? What is a good person? These are all questions that are answered by biblical-based Christianity. And I encourage you to search that. So thank you so much for your question, Catherine. You win a free copy of, a free signed copy, I should say, of the MAGA Doctrine. Thank you for submitting your question, freedom@charliekirk.com. America is ready to get back to work. But to win in the new economy, you need every advantage to succeed. Smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. With NetSuite, you'll have the visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Everything you need all in one place. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in sales, NetSuite lets you manage every penny with precision. You'll have the ability to compete with anyone, work from anywhere, and run your whole company right from your phone. Join over 20,000 companies who trust NetSuite to make it happen. NetSuite surveyed hundreds of business leaders and assembled a playbook of the top strategies they're using as America reopens for business. Receive your free guide, 7 actions businesses need to take right now. It's great for anybody, whether you're a business owner or not. Go right now to netsuite.com/Kirk. Get our free guide, your free guide, netsuite.com/Kirk. Free product tour right now, netsuite.com/Kirk. That's netsuite.com/Kirk. Charlie, which are the greatest threats to the United States in your opinion? The rise of leftism in America or the Chinese Communist Party? Thank you so much, Anthony from Michigan. I think they're both very big threats. I think leftism in America is probably a bigger threat than the Chinese Communist Party. The Chinese Communist Party, though, relies on leftism in America to weaken our country, to dull our senses, to make us less likely to be able to flourish. The Chinese Communist Party has even reinforced racially divisive narratives on Twitter in the last couple days. Chinese Communist Party has supported vocally the Black Lives Matter movement and the division in America. But make no mistake, I believe the Chinese Communist Party is a massive, massive threat to America, no doubt. However, the thing that will take down our country is a left-wing insurgency, is a left-wing destabilization that destroys our morals, destroys our language, destroys our culture, and makes us weak and prone to demise. That will be the great threat to our country, where people are no longer marrying, where the culture is disintegrating, where churches are left in cobwebs or they're filled with biblically questionable celebrity pastors that care far more about their social media following than talking about irrefutable Bible-based truth, about a culture that is far more focused on making sure Planned Parenthood has their funding than the police have their funding. Leftism, embodied in Ilhan Omar, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or Rashida Tlaib, that is the threat to America. But guess what? As the Chinese Communist Party gets stronger, the left in America gets stronger. How is that possible? Because the Chinese Communist Party funds a lot of the American left through their subsidiaries, media companies, Confucius Institutes on college campuses. They almost need each other. If America falls, it'll be because of the left. Every great civilization falls for a variety of reasons. I encourage you to go back in the archives of the Charlie Kirk Show to check out my podcast on the fall of Rome, about how Rome fell because of many different elements, but most importantly was division within the Roman Empire, was a counterinsurgency, a hatred. Do you think that the more the left gets into power, the more competitive America will be, the better our economy will be, the stronger the fabric of our country will be? I don't think so. Every great country comes to a fulcrum point, whether or not they will allow forces that do not have the best interest of their civilization or the country at heart to continue to take root, to continue to grow. I, for one, will not allow the American left to continue to grow in power without me fighting every single step of the way. And that's why we're doing what we're doing at Turning Point USA. That is why we are growing at the pace we are growing. That is why we are able to flourish at new levels, because there's a sense of urgency happening in America. There's a sense of urgency happening for people to save our civilization and our country. Hey, Charlie, how do I get your book, Oliver? Okay, very simple. Go to charliekirk.com. Just go to charliekirk.com. In fact, everyone on this podcast should always go to charliekirk.com, charliekirk.com to check out your latest updates. I'll just say it one more time, charliekirk.com. You guys can always email me, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. Hey, Charlie, I was wondering if you could talk about a history of riots in America. Have we seen this before, and where is this headed? Rick from Seattle. Well, thanks so much, Rick. I hope you're staying safe in Seattle. So let's just do a quick history of riots in America. Well, most famously, George Washington led the U.S. Army against armed insurrection around Pittsburgh during the Whiskey Rebellion. Then in 1814, James Madison had to flee the White House and directed the U.S. Army and in the field in Maryland during the War of 1812. And he had to flee basically because there were riots happening. We can't forget in 1894, Grover Cleveland sent in the U.S. Army to stop socialist organizing railroad riots. That's an interesting factoid inspired by Karl Marx, of course. In 1932, Herbert Hoover sent in the U.S. Army to drive, quote, bonus army out of Washington, D.C. We have seen riots before. We have seen mobs grow in American history. And I could tell you that when you kowtow to the mob, when you surrender to the sinister forces of collective group politics, it'll be the death of the individual in the West. See, a mob is centered around hatred, about pathological emotion. It's not rooted in truth. It's not rooted in the pursuit of truth. It's not rooted in individual flourishing. Instead, it's around communal-based politics. It's very interesting because for years, the left talked about how every individual should have the freedom to live the life that they see fit, that they should be able to do whatever they want whenever they want to do it, while simultaneously also now talking about how you have to sacrifice you as an individual to the mob. It's quite ironic, isn't it? And so we have seen mobs in American history before, and strong, decisive action against mobs and riots tend to work very well. In fact, that sort of action is the only way that you can handle a growing French Revolution style mob. Hey, Charlie, I wonder what your thoughts are about defunding the police. Thanks so much, Derek from Miami. Thank you, Derek from Miami. It's funny, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez just mentioned this on a live stream, and I cannot believe what she just said. Play tape.
This is what political courage is for. Political courage, there are moments in every person's career where you have to stand up and be willing to say, am I willing to sacrifice everything that I have, all the privileges that I have, so that the right thing can go through? This is one of those moments. This right now is one of those moments. So if you're an elected official that for any reason is on this call, I'm asking you to ask yourself, what are you willing to sacrifice to make sure that overfunded police departments are defunded?
So now this is mainstream in the Democrat Party defunding the police. Now, mind you, the Democrat Party does not want to defund Planned Parenthood. The Democrat Party does not want to defund the worst aspects of American society, $500 million a year. Instead, they want to defund the part of American society that is actually defending black lives from being killed. That's right. If you look at the statistics, white men are much more likely to be killed than black men by a police officer. A black man is 18 and a half times more likely to kill a police officer than be killed by a police officer. 10 unarmed black men. Some people say 9. Depends how you define unarmed. But let's say 10. 10 unarmed black men, not even one a month, in a country of 330 million people died last year. And we're supposed to believe that this is a widespread epidemic. We have a huge podcast coming up, and I want you to make sure you're subscribed. Coming up tomorrow, type in Charlie Kirk Show, hit subscribe, leave us a 5-star review. We have a very important podcast because we are talking about how did we get here? How did a singular event, how did one bad cop in Minnesota with a couple of other cops around him that did nothing and have video of that, how did that turn into a massive movement now to abolish prisons and abolish the police? How did this happen? What happened because we were propagandized by mass media, such as the 1619 Project by the New York Times, which is the number one podcast on the planet as of the recording of this podcast. So that's why you guys should type in Charlie Kirk Show, your podcast provider, hit subscribe, leave us a 5-star review so we can beat the 1619 Project. And it was real-time confirmation bias. For decades, young people were told that there was something wrong because they were white, an immutable characteristic. This is anti-Western. This is anti-American. It's also anti-logical. How could there be something wrong with something that you cannot control? Bow down and apologize for your whiteness. In fact, there is a video right here of a white individual wearing a mask. Of course he's wearing a mask. Going up to a rally, a Black Lives Matter rally, and apologizing for being white. Play tape.
You have to take responsibility here. I've been coming to grips with my own brokenness in this situation, my own failures, my own shortcomings, and I know there needs to be deep-seated structural reform in terms of how the department operates. The systemic, the racist system needs to be revamped.
How did we get here? It's because we had a broken school system. It's because for decades we sent our children to go into debt, to study things that don't matter, find jobs that don't exist, to go to a higher education cartel to learn to hate America. And for any parent listening out there, I have a lot of sympathy for you because you're conflicted. You want what's best for your kid. I get that. You want what's best for your student's future. But you also simultaneously are worried that your kid might learn to hate the country. In fact, I just got an email from a wonderful mother who said, I'm really worried about my daughter. I sent her to UCLA, and now she believes all this Black Lives Matter nonsense, and she said they live in Orange County. I mean, that's an upper-middle-class neighborhood, obviously, one of the nicest neighborhoods on the planet, and learning to hate the country. I mean, this is very predictable, though, is because when young people do not have a rite of passage, and I encourage you to go back to our War on Men podcast to check this out, when young people do not have a rite of passage, then all of a sudden, they feel as if they have to atone for any sort of hierarchy imbalance that they might benefit from. This is wrong. In fact, your parents and your grandparents might have worked their tail off so you are able to have a pleasant, relatively peaceful life, not to go protest them for working very hard, not to go protest them for whatever decisions they might have made multi-generations ago. Instead, we have to recognize and realize that we as a country are the least racist multiracial country in the history of the world. And so how did we get here? Abolish prisons and defund the police? Well, I encourage you to listen to the sister episode because I dive into this deeply. I dive into the motivations of the left. I dive into what drives the left, how they blame the system, not the individual, instead of creating good moral people and creating ethical people. The left is much more worried about deconstructing a system that they consider to be oppressive. And when you view it through that lens, when you're able to view the left through the lens of how they want to destroy the world around them because they deem it to be so unjust and so oppressive, it's rather intellectually liberating. It actually gives you clarity of what the left is going to do next. They're not going to hold people responsible for murdering or looting or raping or for burning or for pillaging. No. Instead, they're going to say the system made them do it. It's almost in a very elementary and rudimentary way of not ever having a child take responsibility for their actions. It's almost creating an entire society of fully physically developed infants that blame other people for every single problem that they come across. Now, I'm not to say that fatherlessness, of course, plays a role in all this. In fact, the most important variable for why the Black community is suffering in America is fatherlessness. It's not racism, and it's not colorism. And so some people say, well, we have a colorism problem, that we discriminate against people with darker skin. Then how on earth do Indian Americans succeed at such higher rates than white Americans in America? Why do Indian Americans, immigrants from India, who have very dark skin, which their melanin content would actually be close to black Americans, why are they able to flourish in America? How are they able to rise up against all the racism? In fact, Indian Americans, on average, make close to $20,000 to $30,000 or more per year than white Americans. How are we a systemically racist country if people from India, Bangladesh, Thailand, Vietnam are able to succeed? The Constitution was not written in Korean. Our founding documents were not written for the benefit of people in Southeast Asia. In fact, they were written for the benefit of the nation state, for individuals and human beings that are Americans. And it disproves this entire idea that America is systemically racist through and through. Let's go to this question. Hey, Charlie, what do you think of the recent controversy with Drew Brees? Thanks so much, Allie from New Orleans. She would be asking about this. So Drew Brees did the right thing initially, and then he kowtows, and he apologized to the mob. I was going to buy a Drew Brees jersey. I was going to say great things about him. He's now a coward like all the rest of him. So he says this in a recent tweet to Donald Trump. Through my ongoing conversation with friends, teammates, and leaders in the black community, I realize that it is not an issue about the American flag. It has never been. We can no longer use the flag to turn people away or distract them from the real issues in the face of our black communities. Dot, dot, dot. He continues to go. Listen, we are not systemically racist. And when the National Football League, which employs hundreds of black men that make millions of dollars a year, all of a sudden are saying that our country is systemically racist, it's a rather disingenuous thing to say. Only in America would black individuals be able to earn millions and millions of dollars a year to do what they do. Now, that doesn't necessarily and inherently disprove systemic racism. The National Football League of every single league should stop pandering and start worrying about when we're going to get football back. Roger Goodell is the worst commissioner in the history of sports. Roger Goodell is absolutely awful. He's notoriously awful. In fact, people have made entire careers bashing up against Roger Goodell. And on a side note, I can't wait for football to get back. I think that the more that Americans are disconnected from football and from sports, the more likely we are to participate in total societal destruction. I mean, you're talking about multi-billion dollar a month industries that have just disappeared. And thank goodness we're getting the NBA back, so we're able to see LeBron James wonderfully and tragically choke in real time of something he is very skilled at doing. And I want to talk about LeBron James. I talked about this in a previous podcast, but it just so bothers me that LeBron James says, I'm not going to shut up about racism in America. Well, first of all, again, show me the racist incident and I will denounce it, but you will not show me a systemically racist country where LeBron James, who is a total fool, is able to succeed at the level he is able to succeed in the realm of basketball. Good for him. And on the competence hierarchy, he is at the highest level, the performance hierarchy. He's definitely not at the highest level of the competence hierarchy, but he's at a very high level of the performance hierarchy of basketball. Generally, he's very good statistically. He's awful in clutch positions and circumstances when Michael Jordan is actually the far better basketball player. It's not even close. So let's get to another question. I appreciate the question about Drew Brees, but I don't want to hyperfixate on that. This is from Sam in St. Louis. Hey, Charlie, I'm seeing rumors, in fact, the New York Times is reporting it, that Bush and Romney will not support Trump's reelection. What do you think about this? I think this is great. I think that the establishment politicians that got us into the Iraq War to appease China, to kowtow to every worst aspect of globalist philosophy, that helped create NAFTA, dictator displacement in countries overseas while never challenging the rise of the Chinese Communist Party, that never spoke at the March for Life of George W. Bush, that Mitt Romney, who has been so feckless and so ungrateful that could never have won the presidency himself, do they really think that conservatism is going back in the direction of George Bush and Mitt Romney, where we can manage big government better than you can, that they just want to make friends with the left, that they want the left to love them? I got news for you, George W. Bush and Mitt Romney. I've been very nice to George W. Bush throughout podcasts, and I will continue to be so. If George W. Bush takes off the gloves and go up against Donald Trump, that will be crossing the Rubicon in my eyes. If George W. Bush really wants to have a conversation about bad governance, why don't we talk about Medicare Part D, No Child Left Behind, and big government Bush Republicanism? Here's the best point I can make to the difference between Donald Trump and George W. Bush. Two words. John Roberts. John Roberts. John Roberts has just ruled incorrectly recently on the California church that's suing the federal government and the state government to reopen. Incorrectly. Meanwhile, we're allowed to have 7,000 non-socially distanced, non-mask-wearing rioters and protesters through our streets, but Christians are not allowed to go to church. Thank you, John Roberts, for that. John Roberts on the wrong side of the Obamacare decision, all thanks to George W. Bush. Meanwhile, Gorsuch and Kavanaugh ruling correctly on all decisions. Donald Trump, as imperfect as we all are, and if you aren't the biggest Donald Trump fan in the world, do you love America? If you do, please suck it up. Suck it up for the future of our country, because Donald Trump's ethos is I'm going to do whatever it takes to put the greatest threat to our country, the left, on defense, the media, academia, and all of the different parts of American society on defense while I hyper-focus on restoring America back to greatness. I'm going to bring manufacturing jobs. I'm going to rebuild our industrial base. I'm going to make foreign policy decisions in the best interest of our country. Donald Trump has restored our country to greatness, and he's going to do it again. And by the way, he crushed this latest jobs report in a way that the experts could never have possibly imagined. The same experts that have been professionally wrong for decades, the same experts that have been stumbling over themselves, whether it be about China, North Korea, trade, Iran, the stock market, the Dow Jones, NASDAQ, Trump's not going to win. The experts are so wrong for so often. If you want commentary on that, go back a couple episodes ago to our Saturday episode. I kind of debunk how the experts are so professionally wrong for so long. So Bush and Romney, you're not going to support Trump's reelection? Don't. Go support the Democrats. That's actually probably closer to your philosophy. We're building a new Republican Party. One around people that shower before work and after work. One around that believe we are losing America with a sense of urgency. One around defending Christianity and our Judeo-Christian construct. One around defending the Constitution and putting justices like Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. One around a robust economy of free market principles, stuff that Romney and Bush would not be able to do. One that challenges the Chinese Communist Party. One that is around not making foreign policy mistakes like the Iraq War again. The Republican Party and the conservative movement will be stronger because of the infusion of the MAGA doctrine. You should go check it out for generations. It's time to embrace it and time to excommunicate anyone from the conservative movement that wants to get back to big government corporate appeasement of endless visas, open borders, and the rest of it. The country will be better because of it. This will be the final question. Hey, Charlie, I've been recently watching on Netflix, Ozark. I'm really glad you also enjoyed it. Can you talk about other shows as well that you have enjoyed? Thanks so much. Chrissy from Missouri. Well, I guess someone from Missouri would be watching the Ozarks. Thanks so much for the question. Look, I love Ozark. It's a terrific show. Marty and Wendy Bird are two of the greatest archetypes of modern America you can imagine, where you have kind of a feminine male and a masculine woman, which is played out many, many times in America. I hate to be overly stereotypical, but it's just true, where the woman actually cheats on the man, where the man is much more feminine, much more patient, much more intuitive, much more deliberate, where the woman is much more headstrong, much more planning, much more career-focused. And that's not the only thing that plays out in the entire movie. It's also about how far are you willing to go to try to cover up a past injustice? How far are you willing to push the boundaries of moral relativism till you're actually comfortable with it? It's a story around children growing older in real time, and it's terrific. I love Breaking Bad. It's similar to Ozark. Breaking Bad is actually much darker than Ozark. Ozark is a little bit slower. Breaking Bad is a much quicker show, and there's a lot more violence in Breaking Bad than Ozark, and Ozark still has its fair share of violence. I like most people, have enjoyed the great kind of shows of the last 20 or 30 years. I do enjoy The Office. The Office is brilliant in its early years when it was just so brutally politically incorrect, and it embraced Michael Scott as just the irreverent, almost meme before memes. It was like before you had memes, you had the person in the office or in the classroom that would always be able to have the best one-liners. I guess that person was probably Benny Johnson in a yesterday's America. Let's put it that way. The Office is so beyond terrific. It's one of the greatest shows. And look, I've actually enjoyed watching Waco. It's very well produced. But my favorite show recently is The Last Dance. being from Chicago, Michael Jordan's story, his obsession with success, his obsession, his rage to master is so admirable, is something I think everyone can learn from, and something that I think that it makes America the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world. People's obsession with achieving success. Well, thank you guys so much for your questions. Email me more, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. Stay tuned to this podcast feed for new podcasts. We've been doing two a day, and we're probably going to keep it up as long as the news continues to break at the rate it is, but we might go back to one soon. But just still, type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider, and the first 20 people that leave a five-star review, screenshot you doing it and also being subscribed, we'll get a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine. We just sent out a bunch this last weekend. We'll sign another 20 more. Prove it to us. Email us, freedom@charliekirk.com, and we'll send you a signed copy. God bless you guys. God bless our country. Thanks so much for listening. Talk soon.